Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Dr. Robert Peskin, Dr. Raymond Ellis, and Andrea and Ron DeFeo. Tall structures are designed to sway slightly in response to wind and earthquakes. Some flexibility is designed into tall and light structures for the sake of resilience and economy. But managing movement is important for the comfort of occupants and the stability of the structures themselves. To learn how tall buildings are designed to respond to and resist wind and other external forces, we're talking today with Dr. Mark Nelson, who leads the Advanced Technology and Research Group in the New York City office of AROP, an international engineering and architectural design firm. Mark, I'm really glad to talk with you today.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So let's start with maybe an easy question. Why do we design buildings to move in the wind?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the answer is it would just be uneconomical not to do that. Actually, every structure that you see, whether it's a bridge or a building, no matter how tall or short, moves a little bit. Just most buildings move such a little bit that you can't see the movement, you can't perceive the movement. But designing, for instance, a very tall building so that it wouldn't move at all would just be impractical and uneconomical.
So we couldn't, for example, go to a reinforced concrete structure? Wouldn't that be more rigid?
It would be more rigid, but there's even a limit there. If you look at some of, for instance, the super tall condo buildings that are going up in New York City, even if the entire building footprint was a solid concrete shaft, there would still be some movement in that shaft, and it really wouldn't leave any space for windows or apartments or offices or any of the other things that are necessary to occupy.
So there's some natural flexibility built into the structure no matter what?
Essentially, yes.
So how much do the tallest of the tall buildings sway? I'm thinking of some of the really tall residential buildings in Manhattan.
That's a really good question. And it depends from building to building. But often we talk about vibration of tall buildings in terms of what we call millig, or thousandths of the effect of gravity. So 1 millig is 1/1000th of gravity. Oftentimes very tall buildings like that in a very big storm, that would happen once every 20 or 50 years, you might see 10 to 15 millig. So that's an amount of vibration that's imperceptible to the naked eye, but the human body can feel. And in terms of a very tall building, that could be up to a few feet of motion. But since the building is 1,000 feet tall or more, you just can't see that by the naked eye from the street level.
But I could feel it if I were in the top of the building?
You probably could feel it, yeah. The design of tall buildings for vibration is really about perception. It's not a safety issue. The building isn't going to fall down. But you essentially want the occupants to be comfortable in typical types of storms. So it might be appropriate that once in the building's lifetime, once in 50 years in a big hurricane, you might perceive some discomfort. But day to day or month to month or year to year, you want to be comfortable.
At what height, or perhaps we ought to be talking about slenderness, does this begin to matter, that you want to intervene in some active way?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And the answer really is it's not a hard and fast rule. So it depends on the type of building as well. For an office building, you can be a little bit more lenient because people generally are only in their office 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. Residences where people live and sleep and spend their whole life, there are elevated requirements. And if you consider something like an air traffic control tower, where the occupants are doing very important safety critical operations, you might have an even more stringent requirement. But generally speaking, you know, the types of towers that are getting tune mass dampers kind of as a matter of course are getting above maybe 800 to 1,000 feet. And also you might look at slenderness ratio. So the width of the building compared to the height, once you get above maybe 10 to 1 in slenderness ratio, you're getting into a territory where you might consider having a tune mass damper.
Are there standards?
So that's a good question. Tune mass dampers and vibration in general is a comfort criteria, as I mentioned. So building codes do not directly stipulate how much vibration is acceptable in the same way that they do other safety requirements, for instance, about the gravity system of the building. But there are published references and guidelines by various authorities on the topic that give guidance. What is generally recommended, though, is if you think that comfort or vibration would be a concern for a building, that you do a specific study. And in the case of wind-induced vibration, that you would do some kind of a wind tunnel study that the whole project team can basically work together and establish the performance for the building.
So you'd actually do a physical model and test it that way?
Yeah, that's correct. So the two ways that exist to model tall buildings in wind are wind tunnel test models, where you create a scale model of your building inside a wind tunnel and actually blow wind on it. The second is computational fluid dynamics, or CFD, where you use computer modeling to evaluate that.
In both cases, I think it would seem to me the challenge is to make the model of the structure a realistic model in terms of materials and design so that the results you get are meaningful.
Yeah, that's correct. A lot of attention goes into building wind tunnel test models so that they do replicate not only the building itself, but also the surrounding buildings, which can have a very important influence on the wind characteristics.
So what kind of projects come to you? Who's at the other end that says, I need to talk to Mark about this to make sure that building motion isn't a problem?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say there are two characteristics of projects in terms of building motion that come to our desk. One is new build projects, where the developer and the architect and the engineer, for instance, who is AirUp, recognize that performance and vibration performance is going to be a key attribute and that we really need to be careful about this such that we achieve the performance that's desired. That's for new build. And then the second type of project is often when something goes wrong. So many buildings get built without consideration for wind, perhaps borderline cases or shorter buildings, and a lot of the time nothing ever happens. But when complaints start to happen due to vibration, that's when we start getting the calls. And in that case, we're really trying to wind back the clock or mitigate the vibration that exists.
So retrofit is really a possibility then, the way you're describing it.
Yeah, definitely it is. And we're often looking at how we can retrofit a building, where we can squeeze some equipment in possibly to ameliorate the circumstances. Yeah.
So tell us about the technologies that you work with.
The most common and I think intuitive technology is tuned mass damper. And the very famous one is in Taipei 101 in Taiwan. And it's painted as a big gold globe. It hangs on some cables. And when the building shakes, it moves around and it removes vibration. Tuned mass damping is just as the name implies. It's a device that's tuned to the building. When the building vibrates, the damper vibrates and it damps. It basically attenuates the vibration of that building. That's the most common type that you'll see. There's also what's called active mass damping or active vibration control. And that's actually an automatic device, a mechanical device that will be monitoring a vibration and counteracting it in real time. And that's a more complicated system, but the advantage is it can tune to any vibration. So you don't need to tune it initially. It's a responsive technology. Then a third common type that we're seeing more and more, let's say, is what we call integrated damping. And so this is actually damping that's built into the structure of the building rather than being a discrete unit like a tuned mass damper. And that will damp a range of frequencies and a range of different building types. But it's very difficult to retrofit that technology. That's almost exclusively a new build type of technology.
So the tuned mass damper, as you describe it, and as I understand it, in effect, is moving in a wave pattern that's opposite to the pattern that the building wants to move in. So is that a fair description?
Well, so it moves out of phase with the building movement. That's true. The way to maybe think of it is it's tuned such that when the building is moving in a periodic way, so the building is moving back and forth every, let's say, 10 seconds, a very tall building might do one full cycle, so back and forth, in 10 seconds. It's a very slow type of vibration. And that excites the tuned mass damper, which also moves once every 10 seconds, but out of phase with the building, kind of against the building, if you will. And then in between, that's this big mass, that's the tuned mass, and the building, there are some pistons generally, or damping devices. And it's as the mass has to move through those damping devices. They act like the shock absorbers in your car, and they basically damp energy out of the building. That's the principle of operation.
So the frequency you're talking about is like 6 hertz, something like that?
So with a tall building, it would be the inverse of 6 hertz. So 6 hertz is 6 vibrations per second. Mm-hmm. We're talking about one vibration every 6 seconds. Okay. So actually very slow rates of vibration.
And the mass that you're talking about is large or it's heavy?
It can be. The mass is generally proportional to the structure that you're damping. So sometimes we put tune mass dampers in a floor, you know, just a floor in a building that might be vibrating. That might be, I don't know, a few hundred pounds to a few thousand pounds. In the top of a building, you're talking about many tons, up to potentially 1,000 tons or more.
And what's the material?
The material can be, honestly, whatever is preferential to the contractor. So for smaller tune mass dampers, generally we use steel. It's fairly compact. For large tune mass dampers, we might fill a basin with concrete, just because it's easier to pump concrete up to the top of the building.
And that chunk of concrete moves.
Yeah, so that chunk of concrete is suspended on cables or some other arrangement, and it does move. And so getting a tune mass damper to work, you know, the fundamental components are the mass, which we talked about, the dampers, which are what is acting as a shock absorber, and then what you might call the suspension, which is what gets that mass to move at the proper frequency. And there's a bunch of different ways to do that. A very common traditional way is to hang the mass by cables. So just like a pendulum in a grandfather clock, you can, by the length of the cables, you can set the frequency at which the mass moves. But there are other ways to do it. For instance, you can set the mass on a sliding surface, like a Teflon surface, and have springs that go laterally. And by setting those springs, you can also set the frequency of the mass. So there's a number of different ways to accomplish that.
Presumably you do modeling, you do analytic work. This device is built into the building. Is there ever a need to go back in and tune the damper that's already there and in place?
Yeah, occasionally there are. So there are tricks we can use to make the tune mass damper tolerant to small changes in the building frequency. So for instance, over time, a concrete building might crack and might change frequency a little bit. Not a serious issue, but it's just something that happens over the life of the building. And you can make the tune mass damper tolerant to a certain extent to those small changes. But if you have a major change in the structure, it's modified or retrofitted for some reason, then yeah, you might come back and service the damper to make sure that it is at the right frequency.
And I'm assuming the way you describe it, that has to do with the way the damper is, that tuning process has to do with the way the damper is attached to the building itself.
Yeah, indeed. So if it's a pendulum damper, for instance, you might slightly adjust the length of the cables that are suspending it. Or if it's a spring suspended damper, you might just change out some of the physical springs that exist in the system.
My understanding is that sometimes one could use water as the mass.
Yes. Yeah, that's also correct as well. Yeah, there are slosh dampers, as they're commonly known, or tuned liquid column dampers as well. And they function somewhat in the same way, but if you imagine water sloshing back and forth between baffles, that's essentially how they work. They're also tuned to the building, and sometimes that's a more cost-effective strategy than a mechanical tune mass damper.
So that's a good topic to bring up. What do these dampers do to the cost of the building?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, the cost is not a major component in the grand scheme of things of a super tall building. You know, it would be a fraction of a percent to a percent of the cost. We're not talking about a major difference, but certainly it's a cost that you want to incorporate. If you are developing a super tall building today, you certainly want to anticipate that there's going to be some cost due to damping, whether that's a tune mass damper, integrated damping, active mass dampers, one of those strategies.
What are the cost impacts of a situation where you need to retrofit?
So those, it's always higher, because when you can design damping into a building from the beginning, you can fully coordinate it with everything in the building in terms of mechanical equipment, structural, etc. Mm-hmm. When we're working on a retrofit project, it's always more difficult because there are always, first of all, physically things in the way of what we're trying to do in the building. But second of all, you need to remobilize a contractor. You know, during the construction of a building, all the trades are present. There's a crane. Everything is ready for you to do a construction project. When you come to an existing building, oftentimes you need to close certain spaces and get contractors in there. So it's always a little bit more complex when we're retrofitting.
But even in a new structure, you do need to sacrifice some space for the damper, I assume.
You do. And the key with tune mass dampers, one of the reasons that integrated damping is kind of seductive, let's say, in tall buildings is because the damper needs to be at the top of the building in most cases. And the very top of the building is the penthouse, which is the most valuable place in the building. So sometimes you can sneak that into mechanical spaces, but sometimes it's taking up space that would be leasable or saleable space, which is also a big cost impact.
I saw recently a design that I think is attributable to your firm, which involved what looked like very large shock absorbers placed at various points along the height of the building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you might be referring to 181 Fremont in California in San Francisco. That's an example. 250 West 55th Street is another example of this technology, where rather than having a unit at the top of the building that's taking up space, we've integrated, exactly as you say, like giant shock absorbers into the structural megaframe of the building. And as the building moves, those shock absorbers essentially have to stroke, and they provide damping to the building. And so that's a great example of integrated damping.
So if I go to a building that has one of these dampers in it, will I be aware of it?
No, you wouldn't know at all that it was there, basically. Certainly, if you could feel the building with it and without it, you would perceive in a big windstorm, you would perceive a difference in the level of vibration that you might feel. But day to day, anyone who's been into a tall building in New York City that's been built in the last 30 or 40 years has probably been in a building that has an active tune mass damper, and there's no way to actually tell that it's there.
So that's really interesting. So it's important for my comfort in the building, and when it's working well, I'm completely unaware that it's there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a bit of a thankless technology.
Yes, that is a measure of your success. This is really interesting, and I want to be able to tell our listeners, go look for one of these. They will not be able to do that, but appreciate the fact that they're likely to be there in a modern tall building.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mark. I really appreciate your educating us on this interesting technology. Thanks for talking to us this morning.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye. Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please subscribe to our podcast and encourage your friends to join us too. The Infrastructure Show is recorded at the Studio Media Recording Company in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Scott Steinman, recording engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I am Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.